Welcome to On Deadline, where you get a closer look at a story out of Odyssey News and News Talk newsrooms. The media story of the summer continues to be around Jeffrey Epstein, the convicted sex trafficker who may or may not have had a list of high-powered clients and may or may not have taken his own life while in jail. The latest twist has Ghislaine Maxwell, who was convicted and sentenced for her involvement in the Jeffrey Epstein sex trafficking case, meeting with the Deputy Attorney General of the United States for several hours over 2 days. This is highly unusual and suggests there may be new information or developments in her case. The reasons for these meetings are unclear, but speculations include the possibility of a retrial, appeal, resentencing, or even a pardon. However, the details of the discussions are being kept confidential. There is also a separate House subpoena for Ghislaine Maxwell to testify, scheduled for August 11th. This could provide additional information, though the hearing may be closed to the public. So, let's dig in.
Would you consider a pardon or a commutation for Ghislaine Maxwell?
It's something I haven't thought about. I'm allowed to do it, but it's something I have not thought about.
But you wouldn't rule it out, sir.
Ghislaine Maxwell being interviewed by the DOJ, and we have Fox's Eben Brown on the phone with us. Thanks for calling in. So you're reporting here on the DOJ, and give us the lowdown of why this is happening or why this might be controversial. Anything about it?
Well, I'll tell you why it's interesting. It is not interesting that a already convicted defendant would have a meeting with a prosecutor about some kind of progress or new information about the their case. That happens quite regularly, and it either pans out for them or it doesn't. What's interesting here is that Ghislaine Maxwell and her lawyer are not meeting with the U.S. Attorney for the Northern District of Florida or any of that person's assistant U.S. attorneys, the people who would be doing the actual prosecuting in a courtroom. She's meeting with the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, the second in command of the Department of Justice. They usually don't get involved at this level, right?
Which says this is a big deal, right?
Which says this is potentially a big deal. How it's a big deal, we don't know because everyone's tight-lipped. But let's consider this a bit further, and this is speculative, but hopefully not off the deep end. If Ghislaine Maxwell had information that could have led to either her exoneration or a lesser sentence, why not divulge that back when she was on trial? Jeffrey Epstein, her supposed life mate, was already dead by that point. She wasn't protecting anything other than maybe some kind of weird legacy. But, you know, she wanted to go to prison for decades over that? I don't think so. So the question is maybe the U.S. government has something new and they're obliged to share that because an attorney would want to, a defense attorney that is, would want to see if there could be a possibility of a retrial, or it could be something that could mean a successful appeal at the circuit court level, or a resentencing motion, or maybe a move towards commutation and pardon. So that's where things get a bit interesting. Of course, we don't know what they talked about. We do know that they spoke for almost 6 hours. Yes.
So, Eben, we all know that Trump is under a lot of pressure here because everybody's yelling about the Epstein stuff. And so This looks like, OK, fine, then let's get this thing going again. But has the DOJ or anybody in authority explicitly said this is why we're interviewing her now?
No. And I don't expect them to. The Justice Department, for any and all cases, from the Attorney General on down to the most junior assistant U.S. state attorney in a given district, has a policy of not talking to the media, letting a trial or any proceeding play out during a trial. And that's been policy for decades, if not centuries at this point. So I don't expect them to really say anything until they get into a court scenario where some of this has to be divulged to the court openly as to whether or not it could be included in some kind of retrial or some sort of hearing, where this matter is re-adjudicated. So up until that point, we probably won't know what it is they're discussing. It also behooves the defense to keep their mouth shut as well, because these can get into intricate bargaining sessions where maybe a plea deal could be worked out instead of a new trial, right? So these are all the possibilities. But we don't know exactly what evidence, if it's evidence that they have, has come to light. We do know, as you mentioned, the president is getting a lot of pressure from his own base, the so-called MAGA, right? Because they, a lot of them have made the Epstein matter sort of a main cause for them, and understandably so. They want to see someone held responsible for the alleged trafficking of children. I think everyone who's decent would say we want to have a resolution to that, too. But I think that for many years, a lot of people had staked personal reputation on there being some kind of exhaustive list of clients or compatriots of Jeffrey Epstein who were overwhelmingly, let's just say, part of the Democratic Party elite and a Democratic Party fundraising elite. And they were hoping to expose them. That may or may not be the case. We don't know. But I think on the other side of things, Democrats who have struggled so long over a number of years, and very specifically since January 20th of this year, to find some weakness in Donald Trump, think that they may have found a chink in his armor, in that his supporters might be angry with him over the Epstein stuff. And now, only in the past couple of weeks, have you seen Democratic Party action, especially among Capitol Hill Democrats, to pressure the administration to release the Epstein files. Prior to a couple of weeks ago, they have said nothing about this, or virtually nothing. So right. There we are.
Okay. Now, I keep reading, Eben, and just because Twitter says it doesn't mean it's true, yeah, which is why I'm asking you. But yes. I keep reading that in the trial of Ghislaine Maxwell, that the prosecution and you know, the law enforcement at the time never really interviewed her like this. Is that the case? Is there a possibility, I guess what I'm asking is, that we could find out something very new from her here?
Well, okay, anything is possible, right? Remember that. Beyond that, I'm sure that at least one FBI agent had to talk to Ghislaine Maxwell at some point during her original prosecution. That had to happen. It could not have not happened, right? And if Ghislaine Maxwell has something new to talk about, again, I'll go back to my original question. Why didn't she bring it up years ago when it could have exonerated her or lessened the penalties she was going to face? Would that not have made sense? So what I, again, now speculative, I think that maybe the U.S. government, the Justice Department, has found something, and they're bringing it to her attention, as they are obliged to do. And maybe she has a memory that has been stirred by something that was not considered back then, and she's very willing to answer any and all questions. In fact, her attorney yesterday spoke with reporters outside the federal court in Tallahassee and said that Ghislaine Maxwell answered every question with enthusiasm, at no point refused to answer a question, at no point sought to invoke any kind of privilege or Fifth Amendment protections. So he was quite enthused that there could be some progress for his client there.
Is there a possibility, Eben, that this could I'm asking you speculative questions, I understand, but that this could boomerang and she could come out and say, yeah, Trump was really not involved in any of the criminal activity that's put her in jail. And she spills the beans on lots of people that maybe the previous administration didn't even care to find out about.
Well, maybe. I mean, that's all, again, anything is possible, right? And I think there are a number of people who have sort of, again, staked their reputation on something like that actually happening. It's possible, but we don't know. And we're not going to know today, I'll tell you that.
When will we find out what's come of this?
When they're both sides are ready to take whatever it is to a judge and begin to resolve it, for the Justice Department to come forward with some new information, some new evidence, for the defense to make a motion saying this new evidence either exonerates Ghislaine Maxwell or it calls into question at least the sentence against her, that maybe it should be lessened. You know, that's probably when we find that out, but that's not happening today or tomorrow.
Fox's Evan Brown on the phone with us. One of the reasons that this has been a little bit confusing to follow, unless you're, you know, really locked in, is that right now you said the DOJ is interviewing Ghislaine Maxwell. But I keep reading that the House is subpoenaing Ghislaine Maxwell also and others.
Yeah. She is facing a House subpoena, which I am under the impression her attorney says she will participate in. That date is August 11th, so not that far off.
Yeah,
I think it's the 11th, somewhere in the middle part of August. So that's not that far off. August is next week, and what she might say in that forum, could be interesting. As far as I know, it's going to be open, but it may be closed. That's the Congress's prerogative to do that, especially if there's any possibility that some kind of compartmentalized, classified whatever could be discussed or revealed, right? So they have that obligation. So, again, I guess we'll see what happens when we get there.
Aside from Ghislaine Maxwell, I keep reading other names involved in these House subpoenas, specifically Bill and Hillary Clinton. Are they expected to testify in this case?
I haven't heard from their camp about what they will or will not do.
They haven't talked to you.
They haven't talked to me. I seem to remember in some other proceedings over the past few years that some other people close to President Trump refused to testify when subpoenaed by Congress. And the Democratic-controlled Congress referred those individuals for prosecution for contempt of Congress. And the Department of Justice proceeded with that. Steve Bannon is a name in that case. Would the Republican-controlled Congress do the same to someone in these matters that is subpoenaed and who fails to show up? I don't know. It's up to Congress.
Is this considered, now that the DOJ is getting involved and interviewing Ghislaine Maxwell, is this them saying we're reopening this case, essentially, the Epstein files?
I don't know if they've used that terminology, but obviously they are looking into something that is new. They wouldn't send the Deputy Attorney General of the United States, the second in command of the Justice Department, out of his Washington office on a plane, I assume, down to Florida to meet with someone who they've already convicted and put away for decades, right? Yeah. She's facing, I think it's 20 years, right? Or something like that. So, again, normally if there's some new matter in a case that has been previously resolved, it's the work of the local U.S. Attorney's office to deal with it. Certainly not the second in command of the Justice Department.
Here's Scott McFarlane, Justice Department correspondent for CBS News, with more on why this is happening.
What are we expecting to hear from her, and what are they hoping to hear from her?
Well, it's unclear we're going to get much of a readout of what happens behind closed doors. It was a day-long interview yesterday, and no indication it'll be a short one today either. The Deputy Attorney General, Todd Blanche, is not just any old Department of Justice official. He used to be Donald Trump's defense lawyer, and he's given the indication that he's there because Donald Trump has demanded full transparency to quell these calls for more information. But I don't know what the takeaway is going to be here, or if there necessarily is going to be one, or if some of this is just making a public appearance of transparency.
What is the game plan here?
Well, that's a good question, and I think part of this is political, part of this is legal. I mean, there's a legal issue at play because Ghislaine Maxwell is trying to get her case appealed and might be looking for a sentence reduction, might be looking for a pardon, and she now has an audience with the Deputy Attorney General. But the political issues seem to transcend everything else, Margie, because this has dogged the president for weeks now. It's causing the very rare fracture inside his own political base. He's trying to get past it and hoping that things like this will help, mute the criticism. It's just not clear that's going to happen.
What would she have to do to get a pardon? I mean, somebody would have to be thrown under the bus. And then if she did get a pardon, how could you ensure that she wouldn't say something later that could get Trump in trouble?
How you get a pardon is a lot different now than it was in 2024 and every year prior. You know, there used to be a functioning U.S. pardon attorney who would review cases, a non-political civil servant who would look for remorse, restitution payments, acceptance of responsibility, and a good chunk of the sentence already served. That's been thrown out the window in this second Trump term, where he is handing out pardons to people who have not even started serving their sentences, have not shown remorse, have not paid restitution, have not accepted responsibility. It is a much more political thing now. And to a degree, Ghislaine Maxwell could fall into that bucket of political pardons if it were to be issued. But there doesn't seem to be a formula or a system functioning anymore. That's not me speaking. That's the fired former pardon attorney Liz Oyer, who lost her job in March, saying that.
I mean, trafficking in young girls doesn't seem like you should get a pardon for that, but much has been made over the files connected to Jeffrey Epstein. Is there anything in these meetings that Maxwell's having with the DOJ that could make them public?
It's not clear what more she has to offer that isn't known already. I mean, she went through a criminal case, and her attorneys argued that there were things she wants to say and couldn't say before she was convicted. But if there were big pieces of information Maxwell's had for all this time, things that could illuminate what's in the Epstein files or people who are culpable of this horrible crime who aren't known already, it seems unclear to me why the Department of Justice or any administration would wait till now, until a controversy sparks, to actually sit down with her. Until there's some type of readout or details in the revelations of these meetings, there's no aspiration among the conspiracy theorists that these meetings are going to produce much fruit.
Yeah. Politically, is the Jeffrey Epstein issue going away for Trump, or is this going to dog him straight into the midterms?
Yeah, that really is an unanswered question, and I don't think we've gotten any clarity on that this week, despite this provocative call to release grand jury transcripts, which the courts are not going to do, and which may not have much meat in them anyhow. And these meetings with Ghislaine Maxwell, they don't seem to have moved the meter with those Trump supporters who think the government's not being as forthcoming as it could be. But let's see if time mutes the criticism as people divert their attention elsewhere.
Newell Norman at WWL Radio in New Orleans is wondering why this is all so complicated when on the face of it, it's very simple. If there's evidence, release it. If there are more charges that should be brought, bring them. Here's his take.
Release the files. Invite Ghislaine Maxwell to testify before Congress and let's tell it all. And let's put it behind us. And if there was anybody that's in those files where they can establish probable cause to arrest those individuals for having sex with an underage female, they should be charged, plain and simple. Now, I don't know what's in the files. I don't know that, you know, there's any of that information there. What I do know is that the previous administration, the Biden administration, had access to the files and they did nothing. And they chose not to release any of the information or anything else. There's been this resurgence here now by both Democrats and Republicans, myself included, because I'm sick and tired of hearing about the Epstein files. What did he kill himself? I don't know. I don't care. Quite frankly, he probably got what he deserved. Either way, doesn't matter to me. But the fact of the matter is, the Trump administration is guilty of providing some titillating details and really getting folks' curiosity up as it relates to these files. So release them. And if they can go after individuals there, they should. The Biden administration had that opportunity. They should have. They obviously didn't. And they obviously didn't release the files. I got to imagine if there was something there that was salacious relative to Trump, one way or another, that was coming out. So I don't know that there's a high probability that there's going to be anything criminal in nature or otherwise that you're going to find in those files, because they had them and it didn't modify their behavior I mean, their behavior in the past is well known that they would have leaked that information at some point in time. So, but it wouldn't matter to me either way. I don't care. Let the chips fall where they may. It is what it is, and it ain't going to change. Release it. Now, unfortunately, there's all kinds of rules that have to be followed by DOJ. The grand jury in Florida rejected the request to open the grand jury proceedings in the state case against Jeffrey Epstein, where allegedly a lot of the salacious details of the activities of the on that island and in his life were revealed. And then others that say that they were privy because of their representation of certain folks during the course of that investigation say that that grand jury testimony is devoid of a lot of that. I don't know who to believe or who not to believe. But, you know, we've gone absolutely hog wild crazy over the Epstein files and nobody really knows what's in there. It's conjecture. You know, and if they have somebody wishing him happy birthday on a list, so what? A lot of people used to be his friends and a lot of people parted when, you know, a lot of these revelations started to be made public. It doesn't mean that every single solitary person that he ever came in contact actually had knowledge of what this guy was about. I would ask you, you're not surprised in your lifetime about things that you've come to learn about not only people in your family, but maybe some close friends, right? I think it's happened to everybody. So, I mean, you know, it is what it is. If there's something that's of any value, release it. I mean, I don't know where else to go with this. It's consuming a lot of people's time. I would be more interested in a much more detailed look into our intelligence community and the manipulation and manufacture of information there, if that's true. I'd love to see an unredacted copy of all of that stuff to gain a better understanding of who did what, when, and why, and how, in order to put in systems to make sure that these two parties, the Democrats and the Republicans, are not to be trusted any longer. Because obviously they can't handle it. And quite frankly, you know, the bastardization of the Intelligence Committee in Congress and the way that they are, it used to be that they would not say a word, nothing, zippo. I mean, it was kind of, you know, not accepted to even ask the questions. The response would be, you know, I can't talk about that. You don't hear that often anymore. We give nuanced responses so that we can get a click and, you know, somebody can get a headline and we're off and running. And they're all guilty of it. And the one that it harms more than anybody else is us, because we don't know what to ultimately make of it, because we don't totally understand all the players in the game up there in Washington. Even as much as I follow it and others follow it, we don't know about all the games. There are all kinds of games and misdirection and stuff going on about that. So, you know, it's just, I think we've kind of lost sight here a little bit, but release it. That's where I am. Release it. I'm done. I mean, it's just the only way that you're going to bring a closure to this and stop the conjecture, because both parties are fueling it, is to release the files. And maybe there's an important lesson to be learned here by these folks up in D.C., and especially Pam Bondi, in the manner in which she responded to some of these questions. She didn't have to say anything. She could have just simply said, the file's on my desk. I hadn't reviewed it yet. I don't know what's in there. We were committed to look through the files to see whether or not there's anything there, and we're going through the process. And I'm not at liberty to talk about it any more than that at this juncture. But no, that's not how we responded in a way that really piqued everybody's curiosity that they're potentially smoking guns in these files.
In light of the rumors swirling about Ghislaine and Epstein and Trump and Clinton and secret meetings and conspiracies, our own Lauren Berry talked to Paul Keeble, chief strategy officer at dating site Ashley Madison, about what passes for truth in the internet age. They're diving into the case of the CEO caught cheating at a Coldplay show, but the discussion is applicable here too. Take it away, Lauren.
And also, you've had a long career in communications. So another thing that this story reminded me of was there's been like recent reports about Donald Trump's health, President Donald Trump's health, because there were these pictures of his ankles. And it just reminded me that there's no privacy, you know, like back in the 40s, FDR, people didn't even know he was in a wheelchair. But today we've got this like micro attention to every little detail. And as a communications professional, what challenges does that pose for people getting messaging out, like, you know, Caroline Leavitt at the White House press secretary, or people at tech companies like Astronomer?
I think it doesn't matter what business you're in. The devil is always in the details. Mm-hmm. If you are intending to, I remember there was a post, not about, you know, this is an old thing that ran around the internet. Someone posted about how horrible iPhone was or how bad Apple was as a company, and they were criticizing them for some reason. But when you, back then, when you used to post on what was then Twitter, it would say posted by your iPhone. And mm-hmm. So the individual was criticizing the very company that they were using to do so. So they weren't thinking through, again, the implications of what was happening. And so in a world where we have high definition screen TVs, where we have the ability to, you know, review things in minute detail and pore over everything for any glaring inconsistencies or very small inconsistencies, you've really got to have a full understanding of what it is I'm trying to present and what are the visuals to that. And it's interesting, you know, if you are in politics, working with anyone who's ever been an advanced person, so the person who sets up the events, I know an individual who is very heavily involved in American politics, and he's worked for some of the biggest names. I won't put that out there so that he's going to get roped into this conversation. But his expertise is seeing the big picture right down to the minute detail. So if I'm going to stage a picture, who's behind my speaker? Who are the individuals there? What is the stand look like? What is the lighting? All the smaller details. And it really speaks to, again, if we live in a world where there is no expectation of privacy, if you don't want something to be known, then you've got to work really, really hard to hide it. And if you, you know, don't want to be coming across as a hypocrite, making statements that can be easily disavowed or shown to be false, at least on a personal level, you got to think that through. You're not going to hide anything in this day and age, despite, you know, the criticisms of the so-called fake media, which I do not believe in whatsoever. They do an amazingly good job at tracking down and trying to verify what is the truth so that we can have an accurate understanding of what's happening in the world. And, you know, I have this conversation with my father all the time. He'll call me about some political issue within Canada, my country, and I'll tell my dad, you know, he will get it from his more conservative lean media. And I'll say, Dad, you've got to read at least two other stories on the same subject from a more neutral or centered leaning publication and a more left leaning publication to see the full spectrum of that story. And then if you still believe your side of it, great, we can have that conversation, but have a rounded perspective on it. And I think that's the biggest thing I'd say to people. Don't rush to judgment, but if you don't want something out there, don't be a hypocrite.
Totally. And then for my last question, I was just wondering, do you think that this story would have the same impact if it was Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos? They're a bit louder personalities. We know a little bit more about their personal life, especially Elon Musk. He likes to get out there on social media and put a lot of stuff. So do you think it would have been different if it was one of the more high profile CEOs? And what does that indicate?
I think, you know, when we're talking about individuals like that, they're more celebrities from a cultural perspective than they are business leaders. Clearly, I'm not denouncing them from a business perspective because they are wildly successful and built amazing brands. But from a cultural perspective, we view them more from a celebrity status, as witnessed by Mr. Bezos' wedding and the celebrity coverage that generated. So no, I don't think we'd get the same response simply because I think, particularly in Western culture, we almost have an expectation that the rich and the famous, you know, partake in these activities with immunity, and the likelihood of, you know, Elon's not married, so he can go do pretty much whatever the hell he wants. Jeff Bezos is now married again. But I think, you know, if he were to be caught, one, I don't think he would act in the fashion that this individual did. And two, I don't think people will be as shocked and or willing to, you know, make this story as big as this one has got. I think it's the mundaneness of it. These, you know, yes, he's a CEO. Yes, she's the head of HR, but these were quote unquote nobodies in terms of our awareness in the world. They lived an anonymous life and then suddenly were thrust in the spotlight because of their actions, not because of who they were.
Absolutely. And do you think just people getting more used to social media and quote unquote, like nobodies getting their 15 minutes pretty frequently and, you know, influencers who don't necessarily have a traditional celebrity background becoming really famous, are we just a little bit more prone to accept this and put them all over the media and talk about them and give them less privacy than we would have in the past?
Well, I think in this scenario, it was very much because they weren't, you know, online influencers or personalities of any nature. It was very authentic. And I think the authenticity of that reaction is what caused it to go viral more than anything else. You will see, undoubtedly, you know, ask me back within 6 months, maybe a year, you will see a bunch of online influencers staging events of this nature in order to sort of make their name go viral. It won't work. Because you can't create virility in this manner. You know, Kim Kardashian, she stole the playbook from Paris Hilton, you know, and people have been trying to replicate those actions for the past 20 years. And surprisingly, not really, they don't work because it's the uniqueness of it. It's the first mover status. So if you want to, you know, get a moment like that, you're going to have to go above and over the top compared to what this happened. And I argue again, even that I don't think will make the case in terms of, you know, blowing up, because if it isn't authentic, if it isn't real, people can sniff that out very, very quickly. And so while people like the online influencer space and we laugh and we can only share things on a much smaller scale, this has went beyond that. I mean, this is around the world. My team has been doing interviews in countries all across the world on this issue from a very small local Boston event, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to On Deadline. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a review.